This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of Invest Talk. It's November 18th, 2014. And, of course, we call it above average investing for the average investor. You can break away from the losing pattern of the average investor, which results in being exposed sometimes to much risk and sometimes to not enough risk and not getting the best returns that they can. Believe me, experts struggle with this as well as amateurs. Don't think you're alone out there. How to balance your portfolio. Both Justin and I caution everybody, all the time, about how to balance their portfolio and not to chase stocks or, for instance, not chasing dividend-paying stocks. I love dividend-paying stocks. We have a program that focuses on half of it on dividend-paying stocks, big blue chips, the other half on bonds, holding them to maturity, kind of a less risky approach to the market. But don't chase them. You don't chase them. So what do you look for in a stock beyond just the dividend? That makes it a good risk. Okay, look at it this way. Ask if the company can comfortably pay that dividend and sustain that dividend over a long period of time and can grow that dividend. Ask yourself that. Can this company pay that dividend they say they're paying? Can they do it over a long period? And can they increase that dividend? Now, what do they need to do to have that ability? Well, they need to grow sales. Doesn't have to grow fast, but it had to have some growth. They need to not pay out more than maybe 60% of their earnings in the form of a dividend so they can have a room to increase it and still have enough money to grow their business. Those are the kinds of things we're talking about. You know, people fall in love with that dividend and say, oh, that company pays 12%. Wow, I like that a lot. Well, I like it a lot too. But can they keep it up? Because when you see that 12%, that's based on last year. Not based on next year. You don't know what they're going to pay this year. So you have to look at their numbers. Can they continue to pay that dividend? And we like to look in the mid-cap section, mid-cap stocks, mid-size stocks that pay dividends, because they can usually have much better growth prospects to be able to sustain the dividends. What's mid-cap? $2 to $7 billion. What's a decent dividend for a company like that in that range? Probably around 2%. Notice it's not huge, but remember, you're looking for a company that can pay the dividend, sustain it, and grow it in the future. And that takes sustainability. Now, does that mean you avoid the big blue chip companies? No. It's just that you don't go chasing them if they've already run up, you know, in price, because, you know, those blue chip stocks can't grow very fast. They can grow, but they usually can't grow very fast. So you want to buy those stocks when they're on sale. You can find them on sale. I like to buy stocks on sales. You should too. So, you know, there's different rules and different, depending on what you're looking for. Are you looking for just a growth stock? Or are you looking for a dividend paying stock? Different rules for both of those. Now, do you want to talk about dividends or something else, growth? I don't care. What money questions would you like to be answered today on today's show? Let's get to the phones. Our line is always open. Here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Osman. I'm a podcast listener. I thank you for your program. It's very helpful. I have a question for Steve. What are you looking at when someone asks you about stock? Usually you are able to tell them right away about lots of information about that stock, like the PE, the debt, the who is buying it, the institution, and what the PE for next year, what they will make. So what exactly website you are looking at, or where are you getting this information from? Because it's really impressive how much you can say, how much you know about this, you are able to tell about stock right away. Thank you. Thank you very much again.
Well, thanks for the call, Osman. And it's a good question. How do I know this? Well, I'm sitting in front of three computer screens right now, and they all have software that I pay for to provide me the data that I'm sharing with you. So when you call up or there's an email or there's a caller on the radio and I know what the stock symbol is, I punch it into the screens quickly as I can, and one of the screens has all the fundamental data. Another has the technical data, the chart. So that fundamental data, I've looked at it for so many years. I know right where to look to see where the numbers are, and they present it to me in a very concise way so that I can tell you exactly what those numbers are. And this is a quick and dirty way to look at a company's fundamentals. Very quick. So I don't spend a lot of time and say, nope, I don't care for these fundamentals. And I go look at the chart to see what's going on in the price action of that stock. So I pay for this stuff, this data. Download it every day. It's all live. So that's, I don't go to the websites, even though there's some very good websites. FinViz, I've talked about several times, and we shared it on our last conference and our webinar as well. FinViz.com, they provide a ton of information in a very concise way. That's free. We also use Yahoo Finance, it's free, and then MarketWatch, it's free. There's different places, but you will never get it all concise like we get. When you pay for it, you get better, you get what you pay for, right? And that's what I'm looking at. So why do certain investment companies do better than others and survive market waves? Why is that? How to invest like a pro. That's going to be one of our talking points today. Also, maybe you don't need long-term care insurance after all. I mean, Justin was going to talk about this yesterday, and he didn't get to it, so I kind of want to get to it. And where else to invest? We're talking about where do you invest. The stock market is a place to be. But so let's say you're worried about it, and you don't want to be here, or you want to be cautious. Where else are you going to go? I'm going to talk about the other places you could go. And then I want to discuss, the market on the major indexes have made new highs. Okay, great. But did you know that the small and mid-cap indexes are not? They're right at inflection points right now. It's kind of important. I think we should talk about that. I think they're going to break out too, but they're not leading the market, which is a little bit worrisome. They usually lead up and lead down. And what people worry about in retirement. What's on everybody's mind about retirement? Why are they worried when they retire or they're approaching retirement? What's the big concerns out there? And I think we should talk about that as well. Now, what happened to the market today? The market was up. Not a bad day, not a great day. Market was up. I think the Dow was up 40. I didn't write it down. Let me quickly get some of that information for you here. Let's go to the NASDAQ, which is one everybody looks at, right? That was up 10 today. And that's more than it has been in a week and a half, up that much. Last week, the market was it was flat, but up a point or two a day on average, a point or two a day. So it was making new highs, but the new highs were like a point. Which is and very low volatility after huge volatility in October. November has shown much less volatility. Have you noticed? They had huge volatility. Now there's none. The market does whatever it does on any short-term look. It can do anything if you look at it on a short-term basis, on a day-to-day basis, week-to-week basis. You don't know what's going to happen. No one, there's no crystal ball. Now, obviously, if there's fundamental things going on that they will affect the market. But day to day, just don't know. So the market is still in its upward trend. And it looks like, we're going to have our Christmas rally, meaning when I say Christmas rally, a lot of professionals just look at the week before and after Christmas. But I'm talking about, let me just put it this way. Looks like we're going to have our holiday rally. And that means November and December are usually up, generally speaking. Usually the market bottoms in October. Now it looks like we might have bottomed. It had a 10% correction in October. And now we're having our November-December rally. Looks like it's kind of a normal pattern for this year so far, knock on wood. But no one can tell for sure. I can't tell you. I'm just going based on probabilities. So that's what the market's doing. Probably will go higher in the short term, next few months, because that's the pattern it usually sets. What can upset that pattern? Lots of things can upset that pattern, and it could be upset. We'll have to see. We just don't know. There are some widely held ideas about money and investing that could be costing you dearly. That's coming up on Invest Talk 101. 888-99-CHARTS, how to reach us. You can do it right now.
Now more Invest Talk, and from the Invest Talk Newswire, Bill Gates arguably ushered in the current golden age of philanthropy, and now the world's richest man has endorsed another way to put money to work for good. Impact investing. Is that a topic you want to discuss? Check in with Steve right now on Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART. Invest like a pro. That's going to be our main talking point. So how do you invest like a pro? Well, I'm talking about, what do pros have in common when they look at the market and invest? And they don't all do the same thing. Matter of fact, most of them don't. You know, they do different things. But they have things in common that every one of them does practice. First thing they do, and this is the first thing you should do as an investor, define your core beliefs. What do you believe? Do you believe the stock market is the place to be? And therefore, if you say yes, where do you think you should invest? Should you invest in big companies because you believe that they're stable and you don't have to worry about them going bankrupt? Do you want to invest in growing companies because you just want to be on the growth side of the market? You have to establish what you believe and set down parameters that you like, that this is your philosophy in investing. And when you do that, then you go buy stocks or whatever it is, bonds, whatever it is, that meet those parameters. Next, what's your time horizon? Are you a long-term investor? Are you 5 years, 1 year? What's your long-term outlook, short-term outlook? What is your outlook? Because then it has to match with your beliefs, your core beliefs. Next, how much risk are you comfortable taking? Because if you're investing, you have to take some risk. Well, you can control that risk. How can you control it? Well, you can say, well, I don't want to be completely in the stock market with all my money. Okay, how much? 50%? 80%? 10%? Well, how much? Therefore, you're controlling the risk that you're exposing to the market. You can also control the risk of the individual assets you're buying. There's a thing called beta, B-E-T-A, beta. That measures the risk of an individual stock to the risk of the overall market, S&P 500. Below 1, it's less risky than the stock market. Above 1, more risky than the stock market. So you can measure a risk of your portfolio that way. Each individual stock could be less risky than the market overall. That means that sometimes you'll be taking, your performance will be below the market. Because if you have low beta, below market risk, then you're going to have below market returns. Above market risk should equal above market returns. It also means higher risk in a market that's volatile up and down. There's ways to measure all these things. These you have to decide for yourself. But you really should write these things down and then follow them. Listen on the go with our TuneIn Radio app. It's free, and you can download it for your iPhone or Android anytime right there on investtalk.com.
Thanks for subscribing to our podcast. A survey shows that 53% of world business leaders polled plan to enter or expand their operations there. Should you join the march back to investing in India? That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. We hope you'll join us then. We continue now with Invest Talk, and you're invited to bring any money question to Steve right now. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Our podcast listeners from all over the world download our program. So for those, for these long distance listeners who listen at their own, on their own schedule, we have a 24-hour listen line. It's always open. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. I listen to you every day via podcast, and thank you for a great show. I have a composition of portfolio question for you. I'm a 60-year-old investor that has always invested in equities. I need to rebalance my portfolio to include fixed income investments to reduce risk for the later years of my life. Is it a sensible alternative to buy high-quality short-term bond funds like the Vanguard short-term investment-grade corporate symbol VFSTX with a low expense ratio of 0.2%, or do I need to buy individual bonds themselves? I'm not sure why anyone would take the risk to buy individual bonds when you can diversify your bond risk by buying a high-quality fund. Does this make any sense? Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's actually a very good question. Because buying a high-quality, low-expense ratio bond fund is not a bad thing to do. It's not. Versus, though, buying bonds themselves, and his primary concern is the concern that should be on uppermost in everybody's mind, and that is diversification. In a fund, you get instant diversification. If you buy individual bonds, now you're taking risk on individual bonds. Now, here's the problem that I want to bring up. When I say this is a problem, I mean as why I don't like buying bond funds necessarily. I'd rather see you buy the bonds. But that doesn't mean you never own bond funds. No. Just be like, if you're in a short-term bond fund, like the Vanguard short-term corporate bond fund, you'll get very, very little return. But when interest rates rise and you own a bond fund, the fund net asset value goes down. Because remember, they hold a bunch of bonds inside, and they keep reinvesting those bonds when they come due. And the value of all those bonds go down when interest rates rise. When interest rates fall, the value of those bonds in there go up. And therefore, the net asset value, day-to-day of net asset value of that fund moves up and down. If you own the bonds, all right. And you have proper diversification, meaning you own a bunch of bonds, 10, 15, 20 of them. What you do is you buy those bonds, hold them to maturity, and they return to their net asset value. Yes, the value of those bonds will go up and down, but you'll always get your money back because you let it mature. And a bond fund never matures, right? It never matures. The bonds inside them do, but they keep reinvesting them, so the bond fund never matures. So there's a difference. If you have a proper diversification of a bunch of bonds, you get all your money back when they mature, then you can reinvest them. And they may go up and down in value, but what do you care? They eventually go back to net asset value. Yeah, I'm eventually go back to par, what they sold at par. They eventually go back to that. So you get your return plus your money back. When you own a bond fund, you get your return, but not necessarily money back, because the bond fund value goes up and down based on interest rates. I hope that makes sense. I hope that makes sense to you. See the difference there? Now, if you try to do this yourself, it's more difficult. You try to buy or sell bonds yourself. Well, are you getting a good deal? Do you know how to evaluate the company underlying those bonds, the corporate bonds, make sure they're quality, and they will be around when they mature? You've got all that work to do. But if you buy a bond fund, the fund manager does that work for you. Okay? Now, where else to invest? That's going to be one of our talking points today. You know, the stock market here in the U.S. is everybody talking about, well, maybe it's overvalued, maybe it's going to go down. Well, of course. That always happens. But I want to submit, where else are you going to go? Are you going to go to Japan? You want to invest in their market when they're in recession? Or do you want to go to China? They have 2 years of falling housing market fall in prices. And their growth rate is shrinking. Still growing? You can invest there. How about the EU? They're stagnant. Their economy is stagnant, maybe on the brink of recession, even though Germany had a 0.1% growth in the last quarter. And the quarter before that was 0.1% shrinkage. But it's stagnant. Okay, so you're going to buy CDs or savings accounts? You're going to make any money there? My point is, where else are you going to go but our stock market? For the time being, it looks the best place to be. So why, you know, and the more worried people are, the better it'll probably be a place to invest. That means there's money still on the sidelines waiting to get invested. I'm just suggesting that, you know, if you have a good, solid philosophy about investing in the market, it's probably the best place you're going to be. Sure, you can make mistakes. You can buy the wrong stock or the wrong fund or whatever, but it's still the best place to be for right now. I don't see it going anyplace else in the world. South America? Brazil? I don't think so. Not doing well. Okay, with markets near all-time highs, it's prudent to focus on fundamentals, so that you do not chase after equities. Do not chase after performance. Don't chase it. Look for properly valued stocks, funds, whatever it is, and invest in those. Do you have a question about fundamental analysis? I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and I'm here to answer your money questions at 888-99-CHART. Ben is on the line from San Mateo, so hold on, Ben. He'll be next, and then you.
This is the Tuesday, November 18th edition of Invest Talk with portfolio manager Steve Peasley. A survey shows that 53% of world business leaders polled plan to enter or expand their operations in India. Should you join the march back to investing in India? That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. Please join us then. And of course, there's still plenty of time to get in touch today. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Ben in San Mateo. How you doing, Ben?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. Steve, I have a question. Number one, how do you actually buy individual bonds? Can you do it in your Scottrade account? Or say I want to buy like Apple or something. I have no idea how to buy an individual bond you were talking about in the previous question. And number two, how do you feel about peer-to-peer lending, lending club and things like that? I'm looking for ways to find a fixed 6% or so, 5% return, and if you had your druthers, what kind of investment vehicle would you choose to get the safest return on investment of that kind of size?
Okay. I'm not keen on peer-to-peer lending because the transparency is not as the quality I like myself. Usually you don't get a lot of transparency. Some of them you do. But when you're talking about bonds, usually you're dealing with a bond trading desk at your custodian, but maybe you don't have one. There are a couple of websites, and you might want to email me, and I'll send you some links to a couple of websites that list bonds for sale, and they use the CUSIP number. If you've never heard of that, that is a number that's established on every kind of equity out there in the world. CUSIP. Every stock, every bond has a CUSIP number. And you can use the CUSIP number to buy a bond. I want this particular bond, okay? Then you can put that order in and type in the CUSIP number. Many of the websites out there, your E-Trade or Scottrade or whatever. But you probably have to talk to them first to make sure that you're doing it right in using their website. But yeah, buying bonds is a little bit more tricky than stocks. It's not as simple. Okay, and really, if you only buy one bond or two bonds, that's kind of risky, and therefore you maybe move to the bond ETF or bond mutual fund, even though if interest rates go up, the value will go down. You need to have 10, 15 different kinds of different bonds so you can get that diversification you're looking for. But you can do it via the CUSIP number. And it used to be you just picked up the phone and called your bond guy at your brokerage, and he charged you a couple hundred dollars to make the trade. Not anymore. We don't pay those kind of commissions anymore. So you can do it yourself with a CUSIP number and say, I want $10,000 of this bond. And but it's got to be available. Go ahead.
Why do you say the bonds are so much riskier? You know, I've heard the mantra that the bond market is so much bigger than the stock market. And if you hold them to maturity, it seems less risky. I'm not really understanding.
It's much less.
It's just because you can.
It's much less risky than the stock market. When I say riskier, I'm saying riskier in the realm of bonds. A bond fund is much less risky than buying individual bonds, because a bond fund will have hundreds of bonds inside it.
Right. I understand.
So
seek out something with a 5% return of investment. Would you be shooting for bonds? Would you be shooting for preferred shares, master limited partnerships? What would be your particular taste?
I'd probably use a combination. If that's what I was looking for, I'd use a combination of bonds, preferreds, and probably ETFs, high dividend paying ETFs. And that would give me my diversification I'm looking for. Okay, I also would use REITs, real estate investment trusts, but certain kinds.
Yeah, you like those?
Okay. Yeah, because they have to pay 90% of their...
What about mortgage REITs?
I'm okay with mortgage REITs. You just got to be careful about the valuations, because, you know, how they borrow money, and when you borrow money and the cost of money goes up, the value of those mortgage REITs go down. But if you bought maybe if you talk about a REIT that invests in, I don't know, let's say storage units or commercial computer warehouses, you know, whatever, the fundamentals of those things are a little bit different than mortgage REITs. So I would be careful of the mortgage REITs simply because of the interest rate exposure. Not that I wouldn't do it, just you'd have to do it with your eyes open. Yeah.
Got you. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Good questions. Time for Invest Talk 101. Invest Talk 101. Widely held beliefs that can cost you money. Something that's false. There are secrets to successful investing that most people don't know. Totally false. There is no secret. There's no hidden way to make money. There's no secret way to make money in investing. If you ever hear that word, if they use that secret or special hidden formula, run the other way. People make tons of money off of people believing that they're being sold some kind of secret. Why, if there is a secret and someone's trying to divulge to you that secret, why aren't they using the secret and making bazillions of dollars for themselves instead of telling you? Instead, they're selling you the secret, and they're acting like they're doing you a favor. Don't buy it. That's totally false. So, how do you consistently beat the market or make money? Well, we talked about it earlier. You come up with a strategy, a philosophy. You stick to your rules. You do something. Do things that make sense, and you write them down, and just be consistent. That's how you can do it. It's there is no secret to successful investing. There is none. Now, you can do it through indexing. I don't have a problem with you indexing, just as long as your time horizon is, you know, way out there, 5, 10, 15 years. And as long as you're willing to ride the market down when it goes down, that's okay, because the market will recover. Now, the biggest issue I have is when it is the time frame. For instance, if you invested in the NASDAQ 100 shares in early 2000, you still haven't made any money. If you buy an index of the NASDAQ 100 in early 2000, you're still behind. See, so there's issues there of longevity that you have to be able to handle. If you bought S&P 500 or the Dow, you're doing great back then to now. You see, so think about that. But investing in index, low-cost index funds, S&P 500, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. That's the Best Talk 101. Thanks to the Business Insider for coming up with some of the things that we've talked about in this Invest Talk 101. If you have questions about this topic, you're welcome to bring it up here to me on Invest Talk. 888-99-CHARGE is our number, and we're ready for your call right now.
Above average investing for the average investor. Don't settle for second-rate results. Do what you need to do to reduce risk and improve performance. Need help with that? We're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Gene in North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Just fine. Thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
You were talking about individual bonds versus bond mutual funds.
Or ETFs.
And, yeah, and I'm curious. There are some new bond ETFs that have a date certain maturity on all the bonds where it liquidates after a date, a certain year. Do you have any opinion about those?
I like those, actually. I think they're a better concept. It's trying to, I don't know if you heard me just a few minutes ago, but the difference between buying a bond fund and buying individual bonds is bonds go back to their mature. You go back to their net asset value of the bond fund versus going back to the par value of the bond. And what you're talking about is something that's fairly new, trying to capture back to the par value to address some of the issues I'm suggesting that there's a problem with bond funds that don't never mature.
Right.
Therefore, I kind of like the concept, Gene. I haven't really done any kind of research into them. I just read an article not that long ago about them and said, yeah, I kind of like that idea. But I have to look into them more. But, yeah, I kind of like that because they're trying to solve this problem that I see in bond funds. And I'm not the only one who sees it. Everybody sees it. It's been doing this, you know. So I kind of like it.
You get the diversification like a mutual fund, but yet you still, if you hold it for a couple of years until it matures, then you know at least you get your...
Yeah. Value of it goes right back to that, plus you get your yield the whole time. I kind of like that. I think that's exactly the same thing that I like about buying individual bonds because you always go back to par. You get your money back.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call, Gene. So, yeah, I haven't, you know, if we can, they're coming out with new ETFs all the time. So I haven't really got into that yet. And I don't, you know, I haven't really investigated it. Maybe you don't need long-term care insurance after all. This was a Bloomberg article, and it was based on a study done by Boston College Center for Retirement Research. Okay, and it focused on single people. And why do they focus on single people? Because that is the majority of Americans. Single people. Now, they're talking about long-term care. It costs $81,000 a year for a nursing home, $184,000 for 25-hour home care. So that is the argument that long-term care insurance companies use to convince you to buy them. Because what happens if you get sick and it's a prolonged problem? Well, I've not and have never been a proponent of long-term care, and this study kind of supports my belief. It's using monthly data instead of annual numbers, because when you annualize something, it means that you take this $81,000 per year or $184,000 per year. But what does the actual, if you're an older person or a sick person, how long do you actually stay in a long-term care facility? The average nursing home stay for a man was less than 1 year. For women, it's 17 months. And 45% of the patients, don't stay more than 3 months. So this annualizes, well, it's going to cost this much every year, but what chances are you're not going to be in it for that long. So why buy insurance that costs you an arm and a leg when you could, anyways. Most of the time, the nursing home stays ends in death. But you don't go into a nursing home because you want to. You go into a nursing home because you have to, toward the end of your life. So those visits are often covered by Medicare. Most of them are already covered. Medicare visits are often covered by Medicare, which can cover up to 100 days in a nursing home. So why? This is the argument not to buy long-term health care, long-term care insurance. Now, doesn't mean you shouldn't. I would never. I'm never going to do it. I can tell you that right off the bat. I'm never going to do it. I think it's a waste of my money. But maybe you have a different philosophy. Maybe you have things in your personal background that makes you want to go there. I'm just saying, I don't think statistically the best thing to do with your money. I'd rather see you put it in the market, put it in an index fund, let it sit there, keep, and the premium you pay every month, instead of putting it toward the premium, put it toward that. And then when you do need long-term care, use that money, and chances are very high you'll have more money than you need if you do it over the years. Very high. On InvestTalk.com, you'll see a big blue box with each day's talking point topic. There's the topic and description right there. And if it's after the day's program, you can click on that Play Now button and hear the program played back so you can hear everything we're talking about.
You work hard for your money. Why isn't it working harder for you?
And looking at the chart, do you have to look at this the opposite of like a normal stock?
Ask your question. 888-99-CHART is the number. This is Invest Talk on radio and InvestTalk.com. Our listener line is open 24-7 for your questions. Hear the answer live on radio and online 4 to 5 or the playback anytime on InvestTalk.com.
Hey guys, love the show, podcast listener. My question is on product releases and how they affect stock prices. In particular, the Echo by Amazon and the Apple Watch that's going to be released, I believe, in March. What kind of effect do they have on the stock prices? Thanks, bye.
Well, everything has to do with stock prices is the future earnings ability of the company. So, if a company's coming out with new products, and you saw that happen with Apple and their new iPhone 6, right? I mean, you had the bigger size and the small size. The experts felt, oh, that's going to help Apple. So even before they came out with the product, the price was already reflecting some upbeat numbers. Then when Apple came out with actual numbers for their iPhone 6 and when the actual sales came in, they beat the expectations that the experts had. It's driving it higher. So now Apple's coming out with an iWatch. I think the experts are going to be a little bit more skeptical about the iWatch, which is actually good for Apple. We want them to be skeptical. I own the stock in our managed accounts. I have for some time. You want them to be skeptical because you want Apple to beat their expectations. Now, if the experts have high expectations and they drive, remember the experts, with their expectation, drive the stock up before things happen. We're looking out 6 months, 3-6 months, sometimes 9 months out. Well, what's the earnings going to be? And what happens is we drive the price up before the numbers even show up. So you're saying, what effect does these things happen? Any new product coming out has an effect in advance. If the experts and everybody's panning or saying it's going to be a bad new device, the stock price will fall before they even sell one. That's how you got to look at it. Look ahead. We're moving into the last segment of the hour. Let's see if we can't get your question answered before the day is done. There's a line open for you if you want to try it. 888-99-CHART. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics, so please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time. Invest Talk continues now with Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley on this Tuesday. You can check Steve's retirement review schedule anytime on investtalk.com and then click on Schedule a Meeting. You can get together in Northern or Southern California or anywhere on Skype. The process starts right here on investtalk.com.
Let's go to Ratish in the Bay Area. How you doing, Ratish?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, actually, I want to know your opinion on investing in India. given the new government that has come in and given the crude oil prices?
Actually, I think it's positive for India. Earlier I said, well, where else are you going to invest? Japan, China, South America? Well, there is one place that might look pretty decent, and that's India. Why? Well, because they have a new government there. They're a bit more pro-business. Now, India, Ratish, as you know, they move glacially. You think our government moves slowly? India's government moves even slower, okay? But they do have a bent toward a more business-friendly attitude. So, therefore, with new politicians, therefore, it might be a good idea to stick your toe in. Now, the issue with India has done very well in the last year. It's one of the better stock market performers in the last year, India has, India's market. So you got to be careful. You don't want to buy into a market that's already risen sharply. And, you know, so be very careful where you're going to buy. What are you going to buy in India? But as far as an environment in the world to buy, I would put India right behind California, right behind the United States. I kind of like India. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Ratish.
So how about,
Go ahead.
How about for investing for next 3 to 5 years? How do you view India?
I think India will be higher next 3 to 5 years. I think it'll do well over the long haul. I do. I think it's a good place to be. Okay? Thank you, Ratish. I appreciate it. Let's go to Lucy in the Bay Area. How you doing, Lucy?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm interested in two stocks. One is MRK. The second one is AA. And I'm not sure if this is a good entry point at this time.
Well, let's talk about MRK, which is Merck. Merck & Company develops prescription drugs in the areas of diabetes, obesity, respiratory, cardiovascular, women's health. Merck, their sales have been slowly shrinking for 2 years every quarter. Though that does not bode well for me. And they have a nice dividend, 2.9%, but I think it's overvalued. I think that, you know, you're looking at a stock that's at $59.89, going to make $3.54. The last time they made $3.42, a little less, it got as high as $41. And this one's at $59, and just a little bit more money per share. And that happened in 2010. I think it's high. Okay. I think it's not a good buy at this time because it's a bit expensive. AA, isn't that American Airlines?
No, it's Alcoa.
Alcoa is a whole different kind of company. You know, makes aluminum, you know, that kind of thing. I would say commodities, we still have a lot of pressure downward on commodity prices. But Alcoa is starting to turn up its sales a little bit from shrinking for almost 2 years. And now the most recent quarter, they finally grew 8%.
Yes.
And so you got to remember, they made $3.23 a share in 2007. Next year they're going to make $1.01 per share. That's how bad it has been for them. But $1.01 is much better than last year and much better than the year before. It's now going in the right direction. So it's still, though, not cheap. I would wait to see. I wait for a big pullback in Alcoa. I appreciate it. Thanks, Lucy. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Dan in Palo Alto. How you doing, Dan?
Fine, thank you. Real quick, Steve. I know it's the end of your show. I wanted to ask you about Red Hat. I was thinking about getting in at this point. I think the symbol is RHT.
Yes, Red Hat provides open source enterprise operations, growing very nicely, good solid growth in the 15 to 20% quarter after quarter after quarter. Sales are growing up 4% this year, then up 19% earnings 4%, then 19% next year. But sales have been very consistent, 15 to 20% quarter after quarter after quarter. And, of course, that means it's pretty high price at a 40 PE. So it's a $63 stock. And it just recently broke out above its resistance. So this would be a momentum stock at this point, Dan. Not a very good value, but as long as it's moving up, you hold it. If sales are doing very nicely, you can put your toe in and see how it goes. I think it'll be all right.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks,
appreciate
Dan. Appreciate it. Red Hat, RHT is a symbol. Before we close for the hour, a reminder that I'll be in San Ramon tomorrow, November 19th, for meetings with listeners for individual portfolio reviews. I do have one opening later in the day. If you'd like to take that spot and be with me, just go to investtalk.com, click on the schedule appointment, or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.